I'm Jackie Vetrano from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
And I'm Logan Bishop from Belmont University. You're listening to Higher Ed Social, part of the Connect EDU network.
Here we are. we kind of start out with a conversation. So I'll kind of go because I'm kind of excited because today I ran 9 miles. So I'm proud of myself.
So we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. And the NCAA tournament. Have you been watching it at all?
I have been. And I'll tell you, I was a little disappointed with the UNC today.
Yeah, me too. Me too. That was a tough loss. I'm kind of bummed out. And not to say, I think I'm less bummed out than I should be because I just started working at UNC, but it was hard. Hard loss.
Well, you beat Lipscomb, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, I think Roy Williams is such a great guy that even with a loss, you just don't want to see that kind of a blowout. It just didn't look like anyone showed up for that game.
Yeah, I was surprised it was that the point differential was so high. Like, that was a pretty lousy game on their part. But
and we lost
on to
Duke
next
yesterday.
Year, I guess. I don't know what. What did you say, Logan?
And we lost to Duke yesterday. That kind of sucked.
Women?
On the women's side, yeah.
Okay. And Villanova's right down the street from me. So, although I have to tell you, as a graduate of St. Joe's, we historically do not root for Villanova.
Really? I didn't know there was that rivalry.
Yeah, there is. It's a big rivalry. And when they play each other, they actually refer to it as the Holy Wars.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the Jesuits versus the Augustinians.
Anyway, welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, we can let you introduce yourself because we've been getting better about not forgetting to have our guests introduce themselves in the beginning. So feel free to introduce yourself however you feel fit, I guess.
Thank you, Jackie and Logan. Again, I appreciate you having me today. My name is Darren Stocker, and I'm an associate professor at Cape Cod Community College, which is a small little two-year institution up on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And primarily, I teach criminal justice and criminology classes and work with students who are looking to get into the field of criminal justice in whatever direction that may be.
How neat. That's such a cool field. Is that your background?
It is. I actually spent over 20 years in law enforcement in suburban Philadelphia. And when I retired, I got into higher education. And, found myself up on Cape Cod. So I'm really happy to be there.
It's a nice area. I actually have yet to ever get to the Cape, and I'm kind of sad.
Well, you know, if you reach out to me, I can give you the grand tour. 15 towns on the Cape, and each one of them is completely different than one another.
Yeah, even when I was living in Albany, I was so close, and now I live in North Carolina, so I not to say I missed my chance, but definitely has made it a little more challenging.
Well, you missed a couple of nor'easters, so that's good, right?
Thank God. How you doing?
Yeah, we have people from all over. So I'm actually doing well. We when the Cape got hit on the last nor'easter, it was spring break. So I found myself in Florida at the time. And as I worked my way up, my wife actually lives and works in Pennsylvania. So I'm hanging around Pennsylvania outside of Philadelphia for a while, and I'm heading north tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, lucky you that you got to miss it and be in Florida, where the weather's much nicer.
At least this time of year. I mean, I can't handle the humidity in Florida. I'm from, I was born in South Georgia, so right on the Georgia-Florida line, and I could never take the humidity. It's just rough. Not that Nashville isn't humid, but it's way more humid in Florida.
Yeah. Well, in Florida, it rains every day at 2 o'clock, or so I've been told.
Yes.
It does seem to be that way. Yeah, it does seem to be that way. Pennsylvania gets extremely humid as well, so I would recommend not being in Pennsylvania around July or August.
I just want a place where it's like fall all the time. Like not a lot of humidity. You just throw on a nice like sweater or a light jacket. It's not raining. Like I just want perpetual fall.
I was going to say go to the Pacific Northwest. It doesn't get super cold there, but it does rain a lot, so never mind.
Oh,
but anyway, criminal justice.
With rain, because if water falls on my hair, bad things happen, basically.
Well, I did have some questions. So how did you end up an associate professor? Like how did you get from, what you were doing before you were a professor to where you are now?
Yeah, so I'll try and give you the brief, my brief history, and then anytime you want to interject, it's fine with me, or you want to backtrack and ask some other questions about that. But when I was in law enforcement, I had this epiphany that I probably wasn't going to be in doing what I was doing for the rest of my life, so I was looking forward to a second career. And my focus at college was in criminal justice. So I was a non-traditional student. I was going to Westchester University, which is in suburban Philadelphia. It's one of the state schools within the system of higher education in Pennsylvania. And I really just I loved to go to school. And I found myself liking it even more and more and more. And quite honestly, when I graduated, I was kind of disappointed because I wasn't in school anymore. So I felt bummed for a little bit. And then I decided to drive down to St. Joseph's University, which is in Philadelphia. And I met with a super great guy, a great advisor. He was a professor there as well. I spoke to him. And I was accepted into graduate school at St. Joe's, which really made me happy. And by the way, just a super great move on my part. I was very successful at graduate school. And during my education, I had some people that really gave me some great advice. And that advice was to really learn how to write and learn how to speak. So I started to write a little bit on topics that I was very familiar with in criminal justice. I was getting published in some of the trade publications, and I was going to small conferences and listening to what people had to say. I was putting some ideas together. I was doing some research on different subjects, and I wound up finding myself speaking at those conferences. So as I continued throughout graduate school, I really saw myself looking at education as a second career. So I retired from law enforcement and I got a job. I'd been teaching as an adjunct after I graduated from grad school. I got a job in the industry, actually outside of law enforcement, which was in pharmaceuticals. But I think the reason they hired me is I had a background in sociology and a background in law and a background in really how to talk to people from different countries. I traveled a little bit, and they needed someone that was able to teach some new technology to our senior scientists, physicians, and also be able to break down some of those cultural barriers that existed. Mm-hmm. So I did that for about 6 years. And then the next thing you know, I was recruited at a small institution in New Jersey. I started teaching there at a community college. And then my passion was always up in New England. I had been working on my second master's degree, which is a master's in education, looking at instructional technology and instructional design. Mm. I started to design some online education modules. Absolutely loved doing that. And again, found myself up in New England and here I am on Cape Cod, and you know, I say it's the best job in the world because I live and work at the beach. So, you know, I couldn't ask for more at this stage of my life.
That's such an interesting. Everyone has a cool path. I feel like my path wasn't that cool.
Well, you don't know where your path is going to end. And
that's true.
You know, I tell people that all the time. If I looked back 5 years ago or 10 years ago, I would have never imagined that I would be doing what I was doing. And, you know, the job is all about, you know, I have this expression about shaking hands and kissing babies. And I really believe in that. It's just the more people you get out and know, the more people you befriend, you know, it's just a great opportunity to look at those opportunities that are presented in front of you. And I was in the position to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's a theme of this show almost is just, you know, you never know where you're going to end up as far as higher ed goes. You're sure. Not the only person who has had a really interesting story about how they get into higher ed, but that is probably the coolest that I have heard because it's
sorry, everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, you're in law enforcement and then you studied LMS systems did you do LMS systems at all?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then I looked at those, the LMS and then built, you know, I designed online education courses using different learning management systems. That's exactly what I did. And it opened so many doors because I think the people that hire me at the time looked to see that I had some flexibility and, you know, I was just willing to do whatever it took. And that's what I tell, you know, that's what I tell students all the time is you know, get as many skill sets as you can. You could focus on one thing and it's great, but someone's going to open a door for you. And it's great when you have the ability to walk through it. And that's kind of been my philosophy in life. It's just be prepared. Be prepared to say no and be prepared to say yes as well.
You know, one of my favorite professors said that to me too. Very similar. In fact, he got kind of mad. He got kind of irritated with me because he said that I'd opened up too many doors and I needed to choose a door. Otherwise, if I didn't choose a door, then all the doors would close on me, which was really good advice, actually. And, you know, that's something that I guess my thing was I was too all over the place. You know, I loved web design. I loved biology. I loved geology. And I had been in school for 6 years and, I mean, not to say that he gave me a kick in the ass, but he gave me a kick in the ass, right? Right when I needed it. And it was pretty awesome. And he let me, do a research paper with him when I was undergrad. So I have one paper, published, but, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, Logan, good for you. And I will tell you that I had those professors as well. And I think I learned the most from the people that you develop a relationship with that feel comfortable to be able to give you that kick. And that's really, that's tough to do on both sides as a student, as well as a professor or a mentor, to be able to make sure you bridge that relationship where you feel comfortable to be able to tell someone, in my part as a student, telling a student that, hey, look, this is not acceptable. And you want to bring them to the nth degree to be able to bring out every one of their qualities. And sometimes you have to be a little stern in doing that. But in the end, Logan, it sounds like you really appreciated that. And good for you. And again, for all the people that are doing the same thing, good for them as well.
Yeah, he was an awesome professor. And, you know, I reached out, I had been trying to reach out to him. And then I realized that he actually passed a couple years ago. So that was kind of rough, but for me, but yeah, it's really amazing. And that's probably one of the reasons why I love being in higher ed so much is that we get to work with students and we get to change their lives. And it's really a higher calling. And I feel like that's something people don't see when they work in higher ed as much. They look at it as a job, and maybe they shouldn't. And I know Jackie feels the same way. She's always been one that cares about what we're doing. And I think that's why we do this show, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, I think back to like my experience in undergrad, and like my professional past was forever changed by really the people truly in like my last semester of college, by the professionals, not professors. I'm not to say they didn't influence me, but really my career path was influenced by people that weren't my professors. They were staff on campus, and it changed my whole future. So if I get that opportunity for someone else, you know, to show them like, this is a career path that you could really, you know, you could really thrive in, or here's some resources, or here's someone I can connect you with that would help you get to where you want to be. Like, I value those opportunities because I benefited from that relationship in my undergrad. So,
yeah, Jackie, I would say that I align with that functional viewpoint, where it's not just one or two people within an institution, it's the entire institution, and where someone may gravitate towards one particular person or one particular unit. I can tell you that the staff that we have at Cape Cod Community College really reaches out to those individual students to make sure that they provide the best opportunities for them and the best information and the best advice. And, you know, just because one student doesn't necessarily want to follow one particular career path, well, there's a multitude of career paths. And I think what we provide is a lens to open up the eyes of the student to say, just because you had to focus on one thing doesn't necessarily mean that you can't be you can't do something else.
Yeah, totally. And you probably see that, I wouldn't say more, but at a community college, students I think are at much different crossroads than those at a four-year institution. So you're probably seeing students that are, I would assume, based on my experience with that population, some are already working full time and they're taking some courses to just earn kind of some sort of degree to get them a little bit closer to their intended career path. Others are, you know, typical college age students that might be transferring to a 4-year. Others don't really know what they want to be doing. You know, you've got a lot of different paths that you're kind of, I don't want to say dealing with, because that makes it sound like it's a bad thing, but handling, I guess.
No, you absolutely hit it right on the head. And the other population are those people that are returning to college after perhaps a short career, and maybe they want to do something else, or maybe they're forced to do something else. But we have a very diverse population of students who come to us for a variety of reasons, sometimes economically as well. You know, a community college is, you get a great bang for your buck at a community college, but because you can earn those ed requirements that for the most part will transfer to almost every 4-year institution. Plus you get a start on looking at, you know, whatever you want to do, whether it's criminal justice or, you know, psychology or English or, you know, technology or in Logan's case, maybe it's biology or earth science or something along those lines.
Hey, it's Jackie. Thanks so much for listening to Higher Ed Social. We really appreciate it. I just wanted to take a minute to tell you about this really cool podcast player called Radio Public. And I know you probably already have your podcast player that you go to all the time, but take a listen to Radio Public because it's way different than any other podcast player out there. You can find it both in the Apple App Store as well as Google Play Store. And the thing that's so cool about Radio Public is that it actually starts to learn a little bit about you. You can organize your podcasts into playlists, or if you just want something new, you can head over to the app and pick up a different playlist. They have one called Lazy Sunday or Podcast Club. So whatever you're feeling, you're going to be able to find something. What I think is the best part about using the Radio Public app, though, is when you're looking for something new and you just want to ask your friends, what new podcast should I listen to? Radio Public's got your back. So you can ask the podcast librarians, yes, actual people,
what new podcast should I listen to? And because they have done extensive research and listened to tons of podcasts, they're going to give you a great suggestion. So you can head over to radiopublic.com or download the app in both the Apple App Store and Google Play Store and just give it a shot. You know, you'll never know what you're going to find. All right, let's get back to the show. Do you teach online courses, considering your experience in LMS and designing?
I absolutely do, yes. And that's one of the things that I pride myself on, is that I can take a traditional face-to-face course and deliver it in a different modality, in this case, a virtual modality, where students can learn equally as they would as if they were in a classroom.
So this is my second semester of taking online classes towards a degree. And I feel like I have a lot of questions, but I don't know how to phrase them so that they don't come off as just straight up criticisms. But what would you say is like the biggest pitfall for both students and professors when it comes to online courses, both taking and teaching?
Yeah, so that's it's a great question. And Jackie, quite honestly, a lot of students have very similar concerns. So I'll look at it from someone who teaches those courses and someone that has taken online courses as well. So as a professor, the hardest thing to do is to ensure that the information that is supposed to be delivered to the student gets delivered to the student in a way that is plausible, a way that is good in a virtual environment, and making sure that we, check all the boxes as well to make sure that we're delivering to the student what we're supposed to be delivering. The biggest challenge, I think, for both students as well as the professors is timing. And it all comes down to laying it out and making sure that you do what you're supposed to do within the time constraints in which you're supposed to do it. And a lot of students, well, let me backtrack on that. Some students have very difficult challenges in their life. So as a result of that, maybe they can't go into a face-to-face class. So they want to take an online class. And again, this is just an example. What they find is, planning it out and making sure that they put the right amount of time into that class as they would if they were in a traditional face-to-face class. So they don't make the discussion boards, or they're so late on the discussion boards that they don't have time to really put in the reading and the studying in which they should do it. And then they post the discussion boards, they don't get responses back. They write haphazardly. Again, that's some of the challenges that I've seen personally. But in the same breath, I've also seen a lot of success stories. And thank goodness that in my own personal experiences, I would say that successes in online certainly weigh out those where students were not successful, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it does.
Do you find, because I've had classes where there's been maybe like 10 of us and that felt okay. And I'm in a course this year and there's, I think, like 18 or 19 of us. And I feel like in a face-to-face class, that's not a big number at all. But I'm almost overwhelmed with the, like, especially things like discussion boards or being assigned groups when there's like four of us in different time zones and we have different schedules and different things in our lives. Like, that seems like way too many people. Is there like a magic? Is it different because it's online, or is that just me?
No, Jackie, it's not you. I would say that when you get to about 18 or 20 people in a class, you're probably maxing out the amount that you should. However, keep in mind that every class is going to be different, and the students within that class are going to be different as well. So you may have a class that is extremely engaging, and you have great groups, or people that want to answer, every discussion and answer every post that's out there. And you'll have other students that want to make the minimum. And, one of the things I shake my head at sometimes is that we post these things called minimums, and students, and even us that aren't students, strive to meet the minimum. And very rarely do we exceed beyond that minimum. Mm-hmm. It can be challenging. And Jackie, I will tell you that a lot of students will tell you, told me, that online courses are a lot more challenging than going into that face-to-face environment.
Thank you for saying that, because everyone's like, oh, well, you're doing your degree online. It's not that hard. It's actually a lot harder.
It's a lot harder. It's a lot more work. And the good thing from the professor side is we see more engagement. So imagine that if you're in an online environment, everyone has to participate. However, if you're sitting in a traditional classroom and a question is asked by the professor, how many people are actually going to raise their hand to answer that question? Sometimes it's like pulling teeth just to get an answer.
It's true. I mean, that's why I kind of asked the question about the number of students, because with the discussion boards, every student, at least, again, you talk about minimums, every student is required to answer their own post and then a minimum of 2 responses to your other classmates. And so the value, of course, of more students is that there's more perspective, but also I feel so overwhelmed going back to this discussion board and, you have to read 17 other people's responses and then also the conversations that are following. And then, I've jumped into 6 or 7 conversations that makes me feel very scatterbrained because they're all going in different directions. And it's just, it's a different challenge, I think. It doesn't flow the same way a face-to-face class would. We'd all be hearing what somebody said and someone would respond, and it's just a lot different.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you bring out that is actually the benefit, and maybe people don't see it, is that you do have so many different viewpoints on a particular subject. And I see that as being beneficial. And while some people would be more inclined to try and answer everything and engage with the other 17 people in the class, there are other people that sit back and say, maybe if I do half of that, I'm still exceeding the minimum. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes, it's tough to say, but sometimes some of these questions I'm getting, and maybe this is where your expertise in terms of designing comes in, but sometimes these discussion boards have a pretty clear-cut answer, and so everybody says the same thing, and so you can't really respond other than be like, yep, me too, or I agree. There's not a lot of – it doesn't open up for conversation. It more is just all of us kind of saying, yeah, I thought the same thing, high five.
What? That is a challenge. However, the way that can be combated is to ask questions and then ask for perhaps an example or an experience that the student may want to interject, and that opens it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is especially interesting completing a master's degree. When you're earning your master's, everybody's kind of coming from similar professional or even academic places, whereas I'd be interested to hear how it's different teaching an online course either in undergrad, community college, for basically the 101 levels type of thing, where students can be coming from different majors, different experiences, different intentions for taking that class.
Yeah, it's again, if you take an intro class, especially in criminal justice, I think if the student is trying to feel out whether or not they fit and whether or not there's a pathway that they can take that would satisfy them. And Jackie, one of the things that we try and open up in criminal justice is that, primarily when you talk about criminal justice, the initial thought is policing, and quite honestly, that's about 5%. And the best way I can explain that, and the way I would explain it to listeners, your listeners, is that if you look at the criminal justice system, it's really divided into sections, and that is the law enforcement community, the courts, and then corrections. And then in addition to that, you would have the local agencies, you would have the state agencies, and you would have the federal agencies. So if you put it all together and you mapped it out, you would present it in a way where, let's say you wanted to get into law enforcement. Well, perhaps you wanted to get into a local police agency or a county police agency. Or maybe you want to work for the state police, whatever state you're in, whether it's in Pennsylvania or Massachusetts or in North Carolina or Tennessee or wherever you may be. Or you may want to work for the federal government. So you might want to get into what I call the alphabet agencies, like the FBI or the DEA or the ATF. And again, there's so many of those that most people aren't really familiar with. And they are investigative agencies. Some have police powers, power to arrest. Others are more investigative agencies. And that's just in the policing stage of it. If you were to go into the courts, maybe you want to get into administrative work within a local court system, maybe a court of common pleas. A person might want to get into, say, probation or parole, and then they work themselves up. Maybe they want to stay in the county probation parole. Maybe they want to work for a state, as a state parole officer. And, of course, there are federal parole officers and federal probation officers. And then the last part of it is you have the corrections. So we have students that might want to work at the local jail and work for the county sheriff's department and run a local jail. Or, every state has a prison, or multiple prisons. So we have state prisons. And then, of course, if you commit a federal crime, then you're convicted, there's a good possibility that you might be sent to a federal correctional institution somewhere within the country. So if you look at all those opportunities that are out there, they're vast, and they're not one is alike. And even when you look at state agencies, the Maine state police are completely different than the Vermont state police, which are different than the state police, say, in California or Florida.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, me either.
That's a lot of things.
Yeah, there's 2 million people that work in the criminal justice field. It's absolutely amazing to me, and it's a great opportunity for me to sit down with a student and say, you don't have to do this if you don't want to, but there's so many opportunities, and what I see is the students that are coming back to me that bring their success stories, and whether it's working for the sheriff's department, whether it's getting promoted within their agencies because now they have a degree, or maybe this degree gave them an opportunity to move to a different state and work for a state agency. And I even have students that are looking at federal agencies. So again, I like to say that my success is built on the success of my students, and the best advice I can give them is that there's no boundary for you. If you want to do something, then we will try and find a way or the best way to make that happen.
Yeah, I was going to ask where are they now? What types of things are your students doing, and where do they go after Cape Cod?
Yeah, that's a great great question. So when you come to a community college, you're doing it for one of three reasons. Maybe you just want an education, and there are people that take classes because they don't know something about the criminal justice field, so they take a class. Or maybe it's that person, that same person may say that, I'm working within an agency and I need to finish my degree in order for me to get promoted. So you'll see those students. And then you see the student that says, I want to get a degree and work for, work in the field. So I have those students as well. And then you have students that transfer to four-year institutions. So who are my students? My students are those that have been successful in earning a degree and they've moved on to other four-year institutions, and you know, they graduated or they're in those four-year institutions throughout the United States, primarily in, of course, New England, but up and down the East Coast. And, you know, now they're looking at graduate school. And I have those students that get back to me even when they left me a few years ago, and they are, you know, graduating from a four-year institution, and they're saying, you know, where's a good place for me to go to graduate school? So I have those students. I also have those students that are getting promoted because they've been successful in earning their degree and are within an agency, and now they're making, you know, sergeant or lieutenant within their agency. And that might be a local police agency, or it might be the county sheriff's department in Barnstable County. And we've had some very successful stories there. I've had some students that have moved on to other agencies in, say, the Massachusetts State Police, the Vermont State Police. We've had students that were chosen to work for federal agencies like the Secret Service. And I just had a great conversation with another student who, you know, looks like he's going to go and get chosen to get in the FBI. So we're all over the map. And if you look at across the board, if you look across the U.S., I'm happy to say that we have students really all over the place, and it does bring a sense of pride to me personally, and some pride to the institution as well and the program.
Yeah,
that's great.
How many classes are you teaching?
Yeah, which I have ones great, do you teach? I have great students, by the way. I really do. Yeah, so I teach four classes because I'm also the program coordinator for criminal justice. So in that capacity, I make sure that we offer the classes that are supposed to be offered, the best classes for students in order for them to be successful. I map out some things. I plan some events. You know, I do those types of things as well, and kind of balance the department.
That's great. You know, we're just really glad that you came on the show. I mean, I knew that people at community colleges obviously care about their students, but it's really amazing to actually hear it from a professor.
Well, thanks for picking up on that, because I do. I just think the world. I see these students that are, you know, that often come in and are lost, and you know, a few years later, they're success stories, and that's that's just one of the roles I play. But I don't think there's anything more rewarding to me than when a student comes back and says, you know, I got my 4-year degree and I'm off to graduate school, or they ask my advice, you know, where's a good graduate school for me to go to, or, you know, thank you because, you know, I could finally get that promotion that I wanted, or, you know, thank you because I just got hired by another agency in a state that's, you know, three, four states away. And you know what, that's what I get out of it. And again, I've had some great students, and I've had a lot of great students, by the way.
Yeah. And that's really great to hear, because I know working in a community college that it's not as common for a community college student to feel like any affinity towards their institution, their professors, because a lot of them, you know, use community college as, like you said, it's just kind of one step towards that final thing. Like maybe it's the gen eds that they're taking so that they can transfer to a 4-year. Maybe it's, you know, the degree they're getting so they can switch their career path. And so to hear that you have these passionate students that come back to you and say, hey, thanks so much, like you really did change my future, is really great to hear.
Well, and thank you for saying that. Or hopefully that, you know, I was that person that Logan says that gave them a little kick that they needed and convinced them that they're on the right career path, that they actually can be successful in doing in whatever their dream is, you know. And again, the college that I work for at Cape Cod, they're absolutely terrific. I work with some wonderful people. It starts at the top, and quite honestly, I get a lot of support all the way down. So, you know, I can't ask for anything more from an institution as far as support from the top down. And I have great colleagues as well.
That's awesome. And unfortunately, I think that's all the time we have for the show this week.
Logan, Jackie, thank you very much for having me. And again, I really appreciate this opportunity for talking to you and saying some things about the Cape Cod Community College. It's been a great experience. So thank you so much.
Yeah, hey, we Darren. Love having every week great people.
Thank you very
Darren,
much.
Thanks so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Bye now.
Listeners, head down to highered.social and get links to the stuff we talked about today and subscribe to our show anywhere you can listen to podcasts. If you like the show, please consider giving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter at HES Podcast. Also, send us a tweet. We love talking to you, and don't forget to let us know if you want to be on the show. Higher Ed Social is produced by Emma Hawes and is part of the Connect EDU Network, the first podcast network for higher education. Visit our website, connectedu.network, and subscribe to some awesome shows no matter where you work on campus. Thanks, and have a great week.